Back in 2020, I was doing research into a special case, a special segment of tech stocks. In this particular case, I was looking for businesses that had suffered a dramatic fall of 10% more of value in under a week. We can talk about the reason for my research on another podcast. Anyway, at the time, I noticed one tech company that I hadn't ever heard of before pop to the top of that list. And when I did some background research, I discovered that the reason for their rapid plunge in valuation was that they were a MarTech company, a marketing technology company that sold its services based on its ability to target customers using third-party data. In particular, the trail of crumbs left by the web browser cookies that we all were using and producing every day as we surfed the web. Well, further research revealed that Google, amongst others, had just announced that they were planning on phasing out cookies by 2022, and with it, the technological peephole that marketers had been using to gain some sort of insight into prospects and customers like you and me. And it was this change in policy, this simple change in policy, that tanked the company's stock valuation overnight, which revealed the power and the peril behind the modern advertising market. Well, fast forward 3 years, and today we're going to take a look at the impact that that change has had on businesses, advertisers, and the audience experience, along with advice for those looking to gain an edge in a post-cookie world. Who stole the cookie from the cookie jar? Indeed. Our guide today is one of the leading thinkers in customer data and is co-founder of Amperity, where he serves as CTO. Welcome to the show, Derek Slager. Hey, Derek.
Hey, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
It's great to have you. Where do we find you coming in from today?
I am here in Amperity's headquarters, downtown Seattle, Washington, on a stereotypically cloudy late summer Seattle day. Which is very comfortable for me.
I love it. All right. Well, we're going to get into the topic of third and first party data and some of the changes that we've seen wrought by the tech giants. But before we do that, we do a little thing we like to call the lightning round. Are you ready to play along?
I think I'm ready to play along in the lightning round. This sounds fun.
Let's do this. All right. First question, Derek, what would people say is your superpower?
Wow. I don't think anybody would actually say that I have a superpower. They wouldn't want to feed my ego. But I think my superpower might be just not taking things very seriously. You know, perhaps that manifests in different ways. But I just, you know, I like to put things in perspective and put things in context. And, you know, I like to keep things simple.
I'm going to go with sense of play. All right. The most disruptive technology of all time.
Boy, you know, my sort of immediate mind is framed in all the things that are happening today. I might go back, though. Maybe I feel like electricity is in the running here. I think that's pretty foundational to a lot of the things that are disruptive technologies of today in a really fundamental way. And maybe I have a little bias because I named Amperity after the concept of amperage, because we kind of wanted to be the power grid for customer data. So electricity tends to stay top of mind.
Oh, I like that. And you managed to get a plug in real early. That's that's some quality podcasting right there. All right. The best quality a leader can have.
I think empathy is table stakes. And I think for that empathy to matter, you need conviction. So maybe if empathy is assumed, conviction is the answer, since you asked for one and not two.
I'll take it. A lot of young people entering the industry these days, or people who are maybe changing careers. Your advice to people starting their careers?
I think if you're starting a career, you're in a privileged situation because you have the opportunity to start a career. Not everybody has that opportunity. And I think the advice I would give everybody is to just recognize how lucky you are to have the opportunity to go and build a career and grow and sort of, you know, make it to the top and enjoy that. And don't forget that you start from a privileged place to have the opportunity to do that.
What should they do with that luck?
I think they should use it to make the best version of themselves. And in making the best version of themselves, do that because it'll make the best version of society and the communities around them. I don't think it's necessarily driven by somebody's selfishness, but I think to do well in the kind of environment that careers are built on can have a big impact and a positive impact in the world around you. And that's kind of why we're here, right? Otherwise, what's the point?
I love it. The first thought that comes to mind when you think of digital marketing?
Privacy. Maybe relevant to our topic today, but I just think so much of what's possible or not possible in the context of digital marketing today is really rooted in privacy. So in this moment, that's very much kind of top of mind for me as a thread through all of digital marketing.
Last question. If you could use technology to solve one world problem, what would it be and why?
Oh, boy. This is a tricky one, because I want to say, you know, I want to say something to contribute to, you know, a more peaceful and happy world. And I'm such an optimist, right? I remember thinking in the early days of the internet, wow, there will be no more war, right? Once we've created all these amazing connections across the universe. And I think we've seen that the internet is a powerful tool. It can be weaponized and used to spread, you know, falsehoods and disinformation and to isolate groups. And we see that at the same time, we see all the amazing things that can happen. So I think the internet has been an amplifier for human nature in good ways and in bad ways. But I refuse to give up on optimism. And I think technology, you know, will play a key role in improving society and improving relationships between cultures and nations. And we haven't quite got the formula right just yet, but I think we'll find a way to trend in the right direction.
All right. You're an optimist.
I am.
Let's get into, speaking of optimism, we're going to talk a bit about how anyone can be optimistic in the MarTech world with having had their cookies taken away from them. Before we do dive into that, though, I'd love everyone listening, hey, for that matter, you, Derek, check out Rocket Software, our show's sponsor at rocketsoftware.com. Go to their website, see why over 10 million IT professionals rely on Rocket Software every day to run their most critical business apps, processes, and data. With that, maybe let's just start. Tell us a little bit about your background. Have you always been CTO at Imperity?
No, I've not, although it feels like a lifetime. But no, my journey as CTO of Imperity started with founding the company in early 2016. Been the CTO and co-founder ever since, and it's been a really fun ride. But no, before that, I spent time at, you know, mostly small companies with a mixture of large kind of interspersed throughout, you know, trying to solve hard problems related to data. And if you kind of chop my career in half, the latter half has been pretty focused on customer data and customer data problems in particular. But a lot of that was kind of informed by, you know, solving hard technical problems in other domains earlier in my career, mostly around kind of distributed computing and large scale storage systems. Before that was all easy with the dawn of the public cloud.
I love it. Let's talk a bit about some of the secular shifts happening across the digital marketing industry. And obviously, I want to talk to you a bit about the experience that the industry and us as a public have felt as a result of the deprecation of third-party cookies. And I guess the question is, it's a chicken and an egg thing. Was there a secular shift going on and the cookie thing was just a kind of an innocent bystander? Or, you know, have a lot of the shift we've seen been predicated or initiated by some of the shifts, of which third-party cookies was just one of many that were happening from a privacy standpoint? Maybe take us back a few years. What's been going on?
No, that's a great question. I think an important bit of context, because I think because cookiepocalypse is so fun to say, it gets a lot of the headline story. But indeed, I think that's just in a bullet point list of many things that are impacted by a broader move towards a more empowered consumer with regard to their own privacy, right? And so at the root of cookiepocalypse and many of these other things, which I'll enumerate in a moment here, this is really driven by consumer sentiment and consumers saying, hey, I don't like that deal. I want to have a little bit more control with how my data is used. And so, you know, over the past few years, we've actually seen a bunch of changes that in some cases have been, you know, even more impactful than the cookie. We saw first, you know, a pretty dramatic increase in scrutiny over how location data is used, right? It was not that long ago that you might install, you know, a Tetris app on your phone and it would steal your location and send it to, you know, a dozen different location providers. And so, you know, you can play Tetris and, you know, 24 hours a day, let 12 different companies know which side of the bed you're sleeping on with very precise GPS location. And I think consumers rightly said, no, not that. We'd like to have more control. And so we saw significant decreases in the availability of that data. you know, probably most of the people in this audience have heard something about sort of the changes in Apple's ecosystem, or if they're users of that ecosystem, maybe even experienced directly some of the prompts of, hey, do you want to allow this app to track you, right? ATT or app tracking transparency. And, you know, depending on who you ask, somewhere between, you know, 70 and 90% of people who are, you know, who contemplate that dialogue say, no, please don't track me, right? And again, I think that's both a tangible result of the shift towards privacy and also, you know, a confirmation of what consumers want. They, when given the choice, say, I'd rather not be tracked. And some say that's fine. And, you know, for various reasons, maybe they want, you know, better personalized advertising, or they want the opportunity to have, you know, special offers, whatever it is, you know, empowered consumers, I think, you know, can choose to make that choice. So really at the root of this, it's a shift towards consumers being more in control of their data, and in that, a pretty dramatic shift. And the reason the cookie is so important in this moment is that, you know, Google Chrome has the most browser market share. And today, if you're a Chrome user, it's basically saying allow for you, right? And so any site you go to is still able to use the third-party cookie on Chrome. That's not true in any of the other major browsers, but it's true in Chrome. And so unless or until Google makes that change, and they've signaled that they'll be making that change next year, starting early in the year with a partial reduction in third-party cookie support, and, you know, as best we can tell, kind of ramping that towards 100% by the end of next year. That will kind of be that last place where there's large volumes of data that you can collect from consumers without them explicitly saying that that's okay. And that's going to have a pretty dramatic impact on the third-party data world.
So a couple of questions behind that. And I talked to the user experience, because one of the arguments that's always been made about the privacy versus data capture market, shall we call it that, is that the customer experience suffers as a result of all of these privacy walls going up. You know, we'd rather serve you a targeted ad that says, hey, listen, right now in Seattle, there's socks on sale. No point in sending me that message. I'm not in Seattle right now. Yeah. Similarly, you know, tailoring it to not just my location, but my browsing history. Hey, we noticed you've been looking at this. Would you like to see that? There was always this argument that said, you know, we'll cut down on unnecessary marketing spending and waste, but we'll also stop annoying the consumer with advertising and promotions that are irrelevant to them, and you'll have a much more tailored experience. And I guess the question is that argument even valid? And is that one of the reasons why this change has been rolling out relatively slowly?
Yeah, it's a really important question. I think it is a valid question, because frankly, I think most reasonable people, you know, could find some balance there, right? And I think the problem is in the extremes. And the extremes are just so extreme that it's not reasonable. I'll borrow from your example. It might be useful for somebody to take into account the fact that I'm in Seattle when they're advertising to me, whether they're advertising an event or socks or whatever. The fact that I'm in Seattle might be a relevant piece of data. But the problem is, you know, in sort of ad tech's sort of thirst for additional data, the way that you figured out I'm in Seattle is to go get that Tetris app to tell you exactly where I am in Seattle 24 hours a day. And I think most people would say that's unreasonable. So I think most reasonable people would say, hey, it seems pretty reasonable for you to know I'm in the greater Seattle area. I don't feel like that's a violation of my privacy necessarily. But if you know what side of the bed I sleep on, I don't really trust you to use that only insofar as to establish what city I'm in, right? And I think a lot of people had the experience of some of those apps in that era when this was a pretty common use case of, you walk into a Burger King and you immediately get a push advertisement for McDonald's or vice versa. And, you know, these were real things that people sort of experienced, and they said, what is going on here? This is pretty creepy. And they didn't really feel like they had control in that situation. So I think the problem with the data being, with the ability to collect that data ubiquitously, is there was an imbalance in the trust relationship there. And so I think what we will see as we go forward, and what Google has tried to do, you know, as kind of a compromise to the third-party cookie, is what they've sort of labeled as the privacy sandbox, is coming up with things that are a little bit more in that consensus zone, where, hey, maybe we'll track things that you're generically interested in, but we're not going to track that down to you as an individual person that can be correlated with a bunch of other data across a bunch of other data providers and brokers and ecosystems that you have no control over and may or may not be secure in terms of storing your data. And so I think it's, I think what will happen as a consequence of those excesses is we will find a way to land in a more reasonably balanced place. But that's going to be a really huge shift. And people who were accustomed to knowing everything are going to have to adapt to knowing a whole lot less.
And to the point I made at the beginning of the show, at least based on my research going back, as I said, years ago now, these technology enablers are pivotal to a lot of marketing technologies companies' ability to do what they do.
Yes.
And this some of these policy changes literally, I mean, Apple's similarly, I think, had an impact on a lot of martech companies, can literally make or break a company overnight because they are so reliant on this so-called third-party data. Am I right?
Absolutely right. And I think some companies have already gone out of business as a consequence of some of the things that have already happened. You know, if you were to go to apply that same research specifically to location aggregation companies, they've, you know, consolidated and disappeared. And that's a direct, you know, response to the limited data universe. And the same thing is going to happen in ad tech more broadly. You know, the headlines are a bit stale at this point, but, you know, this notion of a DMP is pretty much a dead category now, because the DMP was a way to sort of build these audiences in the third party world. And so recognizing that world is going away, you know, the category of DMPs is going away. Companies that made them are no longer investing in them and deprecating them. And so, so there's a whole ecosystem that is going away. And again, you know, that's sort of, you know, a really big deal. Wow, all these companies are going away. But again, all of those companies were built foundationally on this sort of, you know, ubiquitous way of collecting people's data that they ultimately didn't want, right? And so from the perspective of the consumer, this is all great. You know, from the perspective of, I'm sure the folks running those companies feel quite differently. But I think the companies who are the smartest there saw this coming a long time ago and have pivoted and adapted and thought about new ways to kind of again, strike that better balance in a way that's you know, reasonable to consumers, or at the very least, there's just a more explicit quid pro quo, you know, where, hey, maybe I sign up for an account and in so doing, agree to let you collect some of my data because you're offering me, you know, high quality journalism for free for the cost of creating that registration. And so there, you know, there's kind of an explicit way of establishing that quid pro quo versus just harvesting everything that somebody is doing across the web without their permission.
Which I guess takes us back to the opt-in and building, you know, better, I'll call them lists, because I guess my marketing brain tends to sort of harken back to that sort of time 20, 30 years ago when you literally had a database, a list, right, of first-party data, people who'd opted into what you do.
Yep.
They wanted to hear from you. They would often adorn their data, or your salespeople or others would adorn the data you had with, you know, additional meaningful stuff about their lifestyle, their work, their systems, the things the accoutrements, the things they've surrounded themselves with.
Yeah.
And I guess my question is are we heading back to that time where companies need to be focusing more on building first party data?
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, right, in simple terms, if I've gotten by in the last 10 years by using other people's data, right, this third-party data, and that third-party data is going away, well, what's left? You know, at least in terms of what's kind of, you know, attributable to an individual, that really just kind of reduces down to first-party data. What's the data that I have? And, you know, good news, bad news, I think, you know, I was around, you know, in the early days of digital marketing and that, you know, those moments you allude to there where people pretty much just had a list of email addresses, right? And they might have used kind of early third-party data vendors to kind of append some other information on top of that email to know if somebody, you know, enjoyed driving or was into something, right? So pretty coarse-grained, pretty simple back then, but sort of acknowledging that people didn't have very much data. Well, what's happened is a lot of people, even if it hasn't been an explicit part of their strategy, they've collected more first-party data over the years because the world has just become more digital, right? Rare is the brand that you can't shop e-com, even if they have sort of a physical presence. So there's a lot of sort of signal that people are naturally getting, and sort of, you know, we lived through this through the evolution of the big data era and you know, now kind of the shift to cloud and all these things that have happened in part to allow people to just kind of harness all that first party data. And so certainly what I've observed is a lot of people are awash with first party data, but they've kind of had the luxury of not worrying too much about organizing it all. It's like, yeah, we have it, but we don't really need to be great at using it, even if that would be nice, because we can just borrow other people's data. And so I think what's happening now is people are realizing, oh, wait, I actually have to really consolidate all of that first party data and kind of solve some really hard problems to bring all that stuff together so that I can use that first party data. And hey, this is kind of cool because my first party data is uniquely mine and actually becomes a differentiator. So I think as people are looking at that, I think the people who have the most first party data, whether or not it's organized, are realizing, wow, we have a lot of opportunity, you know, including, you know, being able to sort of, for some brands, operate as their own kind of, you know, retail media network, right? Or sort of becoming a miniature Facebook, right? Imagine you're a large sporting goods retailer, you know, or a large home improvement retailer. You have an enormous amount of really interesting data that only you have, and you have an experience where, you know, in many cases you've identified the customer. And so you sort of become, you know, a data provider to the rest of the world, right? And so there'll be, you know, more diversity of places to go and use that data. In the past, with third-party cookies and mobile ad identifiers and all these other things, there were mechanisms to sort of consolidate all this data from different providers in a single place. And now it'll be kind of partitioned in different places, which will make things a little bit more complicated, but it'll still be possible, right? And it'll all really be built off of high-quality first-party data. So the trade-off there is there will be less data available, but more quality, because it'll be owned first party data from reputable brands that have the scale to be able to operate that. And in all cases, brands who may not be of that size will have their own first party data that they can use to be excellent with treating their own customers, as well as using that as opportunities to create privacy safe, you know, bridges and lookalikes and things like that into these other other data universes. So some part of this, I think, is everything old is new again, right? Some people will kind of revert back to stuff they were doing in the 90s, and that'll be better than, you know, just making billboards and Super Bowl ads. But I think the best brands and the most creative marketers are going to figure out ways to maximize the value of their first party data, whether they're a buyer, a seller, both.
All right. So that prompts the question then, how do I build, as a company, as a brand, how do I build my first party data, both my own and, I guess, leverage others responsibly? Because I guess that is the whole reason we've been through this, you know, cookiepocalypse,
right?
Which just to me sounds like when I ran out of melting moments at home, but that's another discussion. How do I, you know, what we don't want to do is repeat this by finding ourselves in a situation where the market perceives we've abused this power with first party, and you know, we just go through a rinse and repeat cycle. So how do I build my first party data responsibly?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think the starting point is really just in organizing your own first party data, right? And there's nothing that is sort of a fundamental trade-off on privacy there. Typically, your own first party data is the stuff that, you know, your own identified customers have given you across various different channels, and incentives are quite aligned, right? As you put that data together and create a higher quality first party data asset, your customers win. They're going to have a better customer experience because you're not going to go and, you know, market them to go and buy that thing they've already purchased, or you're going to take into account, you know, their preferences in a more sophisticated way, right? So there's sort of nothing to be majorly concerned about when you're just bringing your own first party data universe together. I think where things get challenged is when you want to take your first party data universe and expand it. And there you have to be considerate of sort of, again, this sort of global shift towards privacy and the regulation that goes along with that, aside from just the technology changes, right? Those things go hand in hand. And I think anybody doing anything to leverage their first party data in the broader ecosystem has to be considerate, not just of where things are today from a technology and regulation perspective, but where they'll be tomorrow, where they'll be in 2 years or 3 years. The good news is that's pretty easy to predict, right? It's very easy to see where things are going, but because all of these changes in technology and regulation are sort of rooted in the same thing, right? It's what do consumers not want to happen. And then that just gets codified in the technology restrictions and the regulation. So it's not hard to predict the future. And so as you're contemplating how to use your first party data, you want to make sure that you're working with reputable providers who are going to treat that data in a privacy safe fashion. You're going to need consent to do what you want to do. And in cases where you want to use other people's data, you're going to have to use that data in a more coarse grained way. More, hey, you're in Seattle, less, you are at this exact location at this exact moment in time. And so those more coarse-grained audience level things, I think, will be an opportunity for people to get some of the value of that personalization that existed before, you know, without the privacy violations that that go there. So certainly my advice would be everybody contemplate a very future-proof way of doing this. Like, you know, you're going to need consent. So don't go make an investment in something that sneaks around consent or tries to differentiate. Oh, is this person not in California? Well, great. We can ignore, you know, CCPA, right? Like the trend is towards everything working in that way. And so that would be the advice I would give for somebody trying to figure out how to use their first party data going forward.
Yeah, and we touched a little bit on the shifting data privacy regulations. Which all seem quite noble, and this is a question without notice. We seem to have progressed tremendously in terms of public policy, but I feel like I've never received more phone calls direct to my cell phone, to my mobile phone,
right,
from, you know, people all around the world trying to either scam me or sell me something.
Yeah, same.
Do you think that we are, I mean, the fact that it has gotten to the point where we can, you know, the two of us have never met and we can have this shared experience, that is usually the precursor to public policy changing. Do you mm-hmm. think there's another wave coming, or is this a result of, or more a proof point that the bad guys, the cyber criminals, the scammers are enjoying the fact that most of these laws are in fact toothless tigers, unless you happen to be a reputable company that's listed on the share right. market?
Yeah, no, I think that's a valid point of feedback. I think we could rewind to probably sometime in the 90s when canned spam came out and banned spam. I don't think I noticed, you know, any impact in that regulation. I still get, you know, hundreds of spam mails every single day, despite the fact that you're not supposed to do that. So certainly there are limits to what regulation can impact, to your point, outside of reputable companies that obviously have a strong incentive to follow the law and to follow regulation. And so that can be useful, right? Those large companies are ever larger these days and they have a lot of impact. And so I wouldn't necessarily go so far as to say as the regulation is useless, but yes, my phone call log matches yours. And that's quite frustrating and clearly something that not just regulation can fix. Similarly, you know, technology by itself can't just fix this, right? Google can take away the third-party cookie from Chrome, but there are still elements that, you know, bad actors or gray actors can use to try and consolidate data, right? There's still some of the fundamental plumbing of the internet, knowing somebody's IP address and recognizing that those things can be pretty stable, right? So that's where kind of regulation has to make a rule that's sort of outside of what's really plausible for technology. And so, yeah, indeed, there's always going to be some dependence on good actors. I think given the lack of sort of third-party unification, I think there's a much smaller space for the bad actors to exploit and take advantage of if you look at it sort of through the lens of advertising technology. And so, yes, they will still exist, no question about it. And they will, you know, they will do things like fingerprinting and other things to try and sort of consolidate identities. But it'll be much harder for those things to make their way into legitimate marketplaces. And so I think most of the commerce being done will be legitimate companies interacting with other legitimate companies. And I think that'll make, you know, the regulation a little bit more toothful and a little bit more effective than perhaps it's been in some other contexts. And we'll probably still get lots of spam and we'll probably still get lots of phone calls that we don't want. And so there are limits.
Yeah, I do wonder whether that is going to be one of the next great areas of public policy that more clearly needs to be done. But what the answer to that question is, I know not. But I just get the feeling again that we're kind of all getting pretty sick of this.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's interesting opportunities for technology to go beyond sort of its root obligation, right? Let's go back to email spam. I receive hundreds of email spam messages every day, but I have to actually go out of my way to go and see them, right? Because technology has recognized that that's such a burden for so many people that they've created really, really high quality spam filters to sort of separate the signal from the noise and mostly put it out of your annoyance category. And perhaps all these phone calls you and I are receiving is a newer phenomenon, and there's opportunities for technology providers or networks themselves to do a better job of effectively providing that same service. I think there's some early efforts around that, still some work to do, I think, in turning that into something useful. But again, you know, maybe the common thread through all of this is consumers are in charge, right? And companies ultimately are beholden to consumers, whether we're talking about their privacy preferences or their buying preferences, right? And so insofar as there's a market opportunity, you know, if we were faced with the choice of using email tool A or email tool B, and one had spam filtering and the other not, that would probably be an important factor in which we chose. And so, you know, I think there's you know, some natural incentives in the system that might, you know, inspire technology providers to kind of help, you know, minimize the impact of some of the bad actors in the system.
So talk to me then, obviously, CTO at Amperity, tell me a little bit about what you're all doing to help companies get ahead of this particular, well, whether you call it a problem or an opportunity, depends on your perspective.
Right. Indeed it does. And I think that, you know, that goes back to your opening, right? If you were the sort of company who took advantage of this, you have a lot to lose. So it's quite a problem. In our case, it's sort of purely an opportunity. And so, you know, when we started the company early 2016, sort of our goal in starting the company was to help consumer brands kind of build their unified view of customer. And the reason we focused on that was because we would read these studies. There was one that came out, I think it was a Gartner study, and it said something like, you know, in 2016, 92% of customers say their top priority is to build a unified view of customer, and 4% say they have one. And that was just the most ridiculous thing. So, you know, even if you rewind the clock sort of in an era where there was relative ubiquity in terms of third-party data and, you know, DMPs were kind of still a hot commodity, people still wanted to solve this first-party data problem, right? And so we started Amperity to kind of help with that, right? And in particular, to kind of deal with the hardest, messiest version of that problem when you've got all this really kind of, you know, data of varying quality in all these different systems across different parts of your organization and different systems which touch the customer in different way and different generations of system and just this huge data mess. And so we said, hey, if we could solve that problem, that would be really useful. And so, you know, to the point about an opportunity, we spent, you know, 2016 through 2018 doing a lot of R&D work to try and solve that problem well at scale, right around the time that this disruption was sort of starting and has really continued since then. And so it's become an opportunity for us, mostly because, again, this was something that people wanted to solve in 2016, but it's becoming something that they must solve in 2023. And so that's certainly acted as a pretty strong tailwind for us. And given that no part of our business was in any way related to or dependent on, you know, third-party unifying identifiers, there's really nothing for us to lose in the process. So so that's been strictly a tailwind for us, which has been great.
Amperity, we've been doing first-party data before it was cool.
Yeah, you could say that. You could say that. Maybe it's still not cool yet, but it's about to be.
There's your t-shirt. Look, I can't thank you enough for joining us today. It's been fabulous getting more insight into the shifting nature of this space. We've done a few episodes on privacy and the ethics of how we use customer data. And one of the things I've noticed is that it is a shifting landscape, both technologically and also public and private company sentiment. So it's great to get a check-in. Where can people go to learn more if they're interested in learning more about the topic or what Amperity can do to help them?
You bet. Yeah. Amperity.com, Amperity.com, our website is a great place to start. We try and keep the content there super topical, recognize what's on people's minds. We spent a lot of our R&D effort over the past couple of years really thinking about paid media and in particular sort of the evolution of paid media. No secret that sort of ad tech and martech are converging by necessity in the context of this privacy shift. So that's been a really big focus for us. So we try and make sure all the interesting content finds its way there. And yeah, we'd love to have you there learning more about what we do and why it matters.
Fabulous stuff. It's probably worth doing a podcast at some stage on the modern digital marketing and advertising stack, because that is another area that seems to be going through something of a secular shift again, possibly, you know, partly as a result of some of these changes. So I'd love to get you back on the show. As we wrap up, the show sponsor, Rocket Software, have a set of values that they talk about, the things that matter to them. Empathy, humanity, trust, and love are there for. Just curious, what matters to you right now?
What matters to me right now is helping our customers get through a difficult transition. And I say that, you know, as much as I can talk about how, you know, all these things are going on and sort of the consumer perspective and everything else, it's pretty scary for brands right now who kind of know something's coming, but they're not really sure what to do about it. Right. And so I think what matters right now is making sure that, you know, we land the message clearly on what can be done and how customers can get through this without sort of having that situation where they're waiting till the very last moment and then saying, oh, crap, everything we're doing is about to stop working. And so I think part of it is just appreciate the opportunity here to spread the message. I think, to be perfectly frank, I don't think people are as panicked as they ought to be right now. And I don't see a lot of people, you know, translating their knowledge of what's about to happen with this kind of complete reboot of the ad tech ecosystem into action. And that's not to say nobody's doing that, but there's a lot of people kind of sitting on their hands and sort of, you know, hoping that somehow this will all go away. And so I think the more we're kind of spreading the message and helping people understand what's coming, the more they can take their future success into their own hands. And I think that matters to everybody right now, or it should.
You've done a fabulous job of evangelizing the case for looking further into it. So again, thank you, Derek, for joining us. Thanks again to Rocket Software for bringing us another episode of Digital Disruptor. And thank you all for listening in. If you like what you've heard, I have to ask you, speaking of opting in, hit that subscribe button. If you can, give us a thumbs up or a review. We'd love to hear or read a review on whatever podcatcher you happen to be listening to us on. You can also reach out to me on the app formerly known as Twitter, X. That's a whole nother conversation for another day. At X the Streams or our show sponsor at Rocket. So if you've got any questions for our guests or ideas for future episodes, just hit us up. We'd love to hear from you. With that, we'll see you all next week. Stay disruptive, everybody.